The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
This is the AM Byte interview. And no, for those of you who may be wondering, this is not a live show. This is a pre-recorded show. Sometimes I put these pre-recorded shows and people jump into the chat and they're like, why can't I talk to anybody? No, this is a pre-recorded show and a very special show as we are joined by an individual I think is one of the better researchers and occultists and just very cool guys out there whose work you definitely need to check out. And that is the Reverend Jonathan Barlow-Gee. And we will be discussing two amazing pieces of work, his book, The Tree of Death and the Klipoth, and Metraton's Wings. Jonathan, thank you very much for coming back on the show. It's been a while, but good to have you back on.
Oh, thank you so much, guys. I'm so glad to be back. Just been busy working on getting books out there. So got a couple to share and figured I'd breeze back through. Thanks.
Rock on, man. We're glad you're putting this content out. And with us, we got the Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you doing?
I'm just fine. And also, as usual, looking forward to our presentation today. It's a very interesting, very detailed too, so.
And very useful. Yeah, Jonathan, yeah. It's not just historical, esoteric lore. It's stuff that could be very important today in our in this wonderful Archon control system. So Jonathan, before we get started, it's been a while since you've graced the show. So maybe tell the audience just a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm a metaphysician by trade. I've learned all I can about that subject from every angle that I can approach it from in the last 30, 35 years or so of study, and learned a lot about magic, esotericism, occultism. But I've also learned a lot about quantum mechanics and astrophysics. And recently, I was just reading Einstein's field equations on general and special relativity, just to try and flex my brain a little bit. Almost all of it was well over my head, but it's nice to try to upload new data. Other than that, I've written about 100 books, which people don't even believe, but it's true. They're all available on PDF right now as ebooks. On Google Drive right now, and starting to get a couple published. The first couple are on esoteric topics, so I thought I'd share those with the audience here, since they seem to be fans of the subject matter.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, check out, we'll have his website on the show notes, and he does great work. I always love your research and insights on the Gnostics, the Sethians, many of the Gnostic texts. So it's it's up there, good level, high level research. But let's talk about your new book, The Tree of Death. Tell the audience about this I know a lot of people probably are like, what is this tree of death? Madonna never sang about the tree of death. The Kabbalah is not about that. What's going on?
Well, that's true. That's true. Kabbalah is not about the tree of death. Kabbalah is about the tree of life, or knowledge, depending on one's knowledge of the history of it. But the tree of death is actually what the tree of life used to be. In the Garden of Eden, we were given to eat of the tree of life, which gave us immortality. We were forbidden to eat the tree of knowledge, which would have given us knowledge over good and evil. And of course, eventually we ate from the tree of knowledge, and at that point were cast out from Eden. And when that happened, what had been the tree of life became to us the tree of death. It's now guarded against our accessing it by an angel with a flaming sword, according to the scriptures. We can perceive it, but only as the tree of death now. The shape of it is just double tetrahedron in the same way that the shape of the tree of life now, which was the tree of knowledge in Eden, is a double cube. So it's similar to thinking of a sapling of a tree that then grows into a taller structure. Or a more complex structure geometrically.
Yeah, fascinating. And the creation from a metaphysical standpoint, is it, as some Kabbalists have said, it's just the negative energy or the shadow energy had to be put somewhere in the tree of life? Or, I mean, some say it's just a Jungian thing. All light casts shadow, and this is a necessary part of not just the psyche of the person, but the psyche of the cosmos. Is that what we can say? Or are there any, what do you think? Cosmic tragedy? What's going on here from a metaphysical level?
Psychologically, I wouldn't necessarily be fit to comment. There's more apt commenters on the psychology regarding the Cliphoth and the Tree of Death and the adverse attributes of the Sephiroth. However, in terms of mythology, the Cliphoth or the Kelepot, the Cliphoth, however one pronounces them, are shells that were the original containers of the Sephiroth. According to the Kabbalistic scriptures, the shells were made of the lesser light and contained the greater light of the emanations of the Sephiroth themselves. And when the cosmos was being created, there was an act called the Zimzum, or expansion and contraction, which was equated to the breath or the breathing of the deity. And when the first breath contacted the created cosmos, it shattered the Cliphoth shells and allowed the emanations to be free from them. And the shattered shards of the shells fell down, supposedly trickled down into the realm of Isaiah, the material realm in which Malkuth, the kingdom, is located, being the local universe in which we live. And the shards of the shells fell down to become the material cortices of all that exists. So essentially, the Cliphoth became the quanta of quantum mechanics, which build onto atoms and molecules and everything that is solid matter in the universe.
So the Cliphoth, yeah, most traditions talk about it that it's a shell. And you mentioned this is actually a Phoenician term, which I was I thought was pretty cool. But the Cliphoth aren't just, so they're just, it's not as simple as saying they're just this evil in the world. It's more complex than that.
According to the mythology, it's certainly more complex than to simply label them as evil, but they've gotten to be like magnets for negative attributes. Mm-hmm. For most of the Tree of Death in the Cliphoth book I wrote, it was just combining and compiling adverse or negative attributes and assigning them to different aspects or paths and Cliphoth on the Tree of Death diagram.
But don't we have, for example, the Cliphoth are down here in in Malkuth, or some even said like Isaac Luria, they're down in the abyss. But the tree of life, I'm sorry, the tree of death actually holds another position, right? We're talking about two different forces.
Well, and again, this is typical to almost all questions, but it just depends on who you ask. The tree of death diagram that I used myself, I derived from Steve Savidow. Before he printed it in his work, The Magician's Handbook, Volume 2, I don't believe it was ever printed anywhere else. That means either that he invented it, discovered it, or that it was secret before then and was revealed then. I tend to side with all three of those being an option, at least, if not probable. But in any event, the tree of death that he describes being the double tetrahedrons is a different design than, for example, Aleister Crowley, Israel Regardi had used for their models of such. They had taken the ordinary tree of life or of knowledge that we have now as the Kabbalistic tree and simply reversed it. So they had the cortices listed as the adverse 10 sephirot, whereas on Savidow's tree of death, there's only 7 cortices or cliphotic equivalents to the sephirot listed, and 12 paths as opposed to 22.
Yeah, do you want to show the audience the diagram now, or you want to wait?
Oh, well, actually, the diagram that that we could show first of the the St. Simon's array is a combination of the two. It's a combination of the ordinary tree of knowledge or life that's been flipped, as well as inside of it, Savedow's double tetrahedron design. So on the top, there's the triple veils of hell, Tohu, Bohu, and Chasek, which mean formlessness, chaos, and emptiness. And then underneath that would be the highest equivalent of a sephirot on the tree of life, and that's the cliphoth attributed to Satan and Moloch, or Malek Satan, simply meaning king adversary, essentially, in Hebrew. And then the paths descending from that are labeled by Hebrew letters that correspond to certain descriptions and sigils given by Crowley as the cliphoth sui generis. In, I believe, the holy books of Thelema, that can be found, but I'm not sure which numbered publication it was originally. But then in place of the non-sephirot of Daath in the abyss would be the highest sephirot or cliphoth cortice in the tree of death of Savidow. So the tree of death of Savidow goes like two diamonds or squares turned at a 45 degree angle, and it's mounted within the larger structure of the tree of life or knowledge diagram. And the combination of the two into one structure I called the Jacob's Ladder, and I've worked with the Kabbalistic version of this as well, because the seven chakras can be assigned to the seven central traits along the middle pillar of this diagram. So it's obviously meant as a highly correspondent Kabbalistic chart to combine the two. But in this particular diagram, I only attributed adverse or evil attributes to it. So this is the St. Simon's array in Hebrew. And there's also one, I think I sent you in English, which has the translations of some of... There it is.
Stop me. There you go.
There it is. Some of the attributes and not others. For example, some of the attributes in the Hebrew array are the names of demons and the orders of demonic, the rings of hell and so forth that they govern over. And in this diagram, I've also included, instead of some of those, the Ten Commandments, and the seven venial sins. So, for example, in this, Satan and Moloch, Cliphoth at the top, Moloch Satan, is governed over the false gods, Cortex or Cortice, called the Taumiel. Taumiel, which means double-headed ones. It means two-headed ones. So that order is listed instead of the names of Satan and Moloch in the English, and the seven venial sins are attributed to the 7 points on Sevadao's diagram, and then the 10 commandments are attributed to the points on the ordinary tree of knowledge. And at the bottom, there's a pentagram that is labeled with the names or the translations of the names of the kings of the tribes of the kings of Edom, which include the Nephilim. So that's an interesting, they were all giants who lived in caves in Canaan prior to the Israelite invasion. So that's at least some of the attributes. If people want to learn more about this particular diagram, they can find it online on a couple of websites, my Facebook page, Twitter page, things like that. But it's best viewed in the book, even though it's very small in the actual printed copy of the book. Yeah, it's a wonderful diagram of about 50 different traits attributed to it.
Yeah, it's very cool. And for the audience, it should be noted that, yeah, we assume that in Kabbalah, you've got the Sephiroth and his fix. But when the Kabbalah started, they were coming up with so many different diagrams. It was never meant to be fixed. And like you just said, Kabbalists do not agree. It's like saying Gnostics agree. There is always going to be disagreement, even fighting, polemics.
Of course. I just got a book recently called, I believe it's called the Etz HaChaim, or something equivalent to that, that's about the different diagrams for the Tree of Life. And it has them from the earliest listed manuscripts all the way up until the 20th century and some of the post-Golden Dawn works. Mm. But what I found is that the what's called the Grah version, ordinarily people use the RE version, which is the one that has the subtended middle pillar. So Malkuth is at the bottom, and then Yesod and Tifereth.
Right.
Then there's the missing middle pillar aspect, which is attributed to Daath. But that didn't exist on the original one. So the original one, the middle pillar, is re-established as completed in the center, and then the sides have three and the center has four.
That is correct indeed. And you mentioned, it was one of my questions for later, but you mentioned it now, you mentioned Saint Simon's Array. Could you tell the audience this important, might say, tool for all these visions?
Yeah, the array itself is just a combination of the Tree of Life and the Tree of Death. But I called it the Saint Simon because, of course, Saint Simon himself was a magician, not necessarily a saint, but he was a magician. First century AD, who didn't he have some story about how he flew and was stoned in midair and then fell out of midair or something?
Yeah, so some of the Christian romances. He goes in a magical battle with Peter. Of course, he loses.
Because
writing.
Yeah, who's the writer? Yeah, and simony is also the practice of selling church appointments as well. Mm. So he's fondly remembered by the Catholic faith. As being a heretic and a magician, but I figured it was appropriate to call this particular diagram after him.
Yeah, well, he's one of the patrons of this show. I've done many presentations on show and on Mr. Magus himself. So Yeah, good leader, good leader. Also, one of the concepts of your book you talk about is the blind dragon. Tell us about this dude.
Oh, word. The blind dragon arrangement is the same as the Saint Simon, but in English. So the Saint Simon is in Hebrew. The blind dragon is the same equivalent diagram with similar labels in English. It's named after the Tannenniver, which I believe is a German term meaning blind dragon. And it is the combination of the slant serpent and the torturous serpent, which are two serpents attributed to Samael and Lilith in Kabbalistic writing. They're actually meant to be representative of the emanations as an expanding light and the rays as an directed light, or the paths on the Tree of Life. So the paths are considered the slant or torturous serpent in Cliphoth, and the emanations or the Cliphoth themselves are considered the torturous serpent. Because like a spiral, they emanate outward.
And for the audience, it should be mentioned, Samael and Lilith are what two important figures. I mean, at least in legends, they're sort of the shadow Adam and Eve, right? And some stories that, you know, God is trying to keep them apart, because if they joined, you get that hermaphrodite story where they become supreme or they destroy the earth. There's various legends.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I've not actually heard that particular variation of it. That seems apocalyptic as well, you know, predicting more of a future than just dealing with the past mythological descriptions. Sorry, my cat's in here.
That's okay. I think I kicked all my cats out, so, but I can't vouch for that. They come out at the worst time, right?
Oh, they love it. But yeah, Samael is another name for Yaldabaoth. So in Kabbalah and Kabbalistic literature, Samael is the preferred name for the Gnostic demiurge. So according to that, and as you'd said about studying the hypostasis of the Archons recently, according to most of the Gnostic scriptures in the Nag Hammadi that deal with the cosmology and the creation of the universe, Yaldabaoth was essentially like Lucifer. He attempted to take the throne of God while God was in Eden. God went down to Eden to create man and woman and place them in the Garden of Eden. And while he was there, because God can't be everywhere at once in the original descriptions, he was also tired after creating the cosmos. So there's that. Who knows? But while God was in the Garden of Eden doing that, Yaldabaoth, or Lucifer, attempted to usurp his throne in heaven and said, now I'm become like El Elyon, the Most High, or the God of the mountaintop. And then the voice of the entirety, according to some Gnostic works, being one of the aeons, or one of the larger emanations, responded to Yaldabaoth and said, "You err, Samael." And Samael means, in that context, the blind one. So the blindness of the blind dragon comes from Samael, and the dragon aspect comes from Lilith, who was created as the first wife of Adam. But he rejected her, and then she was cast off, and he was given Eve instead. And then Lilith continued to visit Adam even after the expulsion from paradise, when Adam girded his loins in thorns and sank himself into the river Gihon to pray for repentance from God. Failed prayers, I might add, but to pray to be forgiven by God. And then while he was in that state, Lilith visited him and caused him to have nocturnal emissions. let's just say, that then became a host of demons called the Lilitu, mm-hmm. who are known as baby snatching night hag servitors that will come and kidnap your babies if you live on the outskirts of town. It was a very real phenomenon back in ancient Sumer. Baby kidnapping that was attributed to demons.
Yeah. I like the story of God and Samuel. I can picture now, like, Yahweh goes back to heaven. It's like, you know, I ask you to watch the cat and water the plants. You've taken over my house, my Netflix account. What's going on here?
Exactly.
So what do you think, Vince? Any questions or comments on these very fascinating mythologies?
Yeah, you know, I was fascinated by the fact that the Kelopoth are actually fell down and became the building blocks of material reality. That's interesting because I think it's parallel to the Gnostic conception that that our material reality is a shadow of the Pleroma. So that's kind of a thing that I kind of realized when you were talking about that. Do you think that's valid?
It's a difficult cosmology to wrap one's head around exactly, because if we picture the Pleroma as being the solid substance and then existence and material reality as being the shadow of it cast by the light that is presumably the Godhead or, you know, the future, whatever one chooses to imagine it as being, the ultimate state of existence. Then that would certainly hold true as it is. And the Kliphoth being the material aspect, being associated with the shells having crumbled down into the material realm, would be the shadow aspect of the Pleroma itself. The question then, the only question is the material realm the solid object that's casting the shadow, or is the aura and the spiritual realm the solid that's casting the shadow of materialism and the material reality?
Interesting. Well, it may, I was thinking that maybe the shells were the basis of material reality. They are actually, our material world was actually composed of the shells.
That's the more or less scientific explanation for it. Yeah.
Okay.
The shells themselves shattered, and then their little shards fell down into what became the material realm. They calcified and solidified and concretized into what we have now is the cortices and corpuscles of material reality.
Yeah, now the question is then, where did the order that we seem to observe in the material world come from? You know, what conditions the shells to behave consistently, you know, throughout all space and time? Of course, maybe I don't know what's going to happen with time, but throughout all space, you know, electrons always, you know, act the same way and all that stuff. Where does that come from?
Yeah, the laws of physics.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Kabbalistically speaking, the laws of physics are explained by the four terrestrial elements as opposed to the four universal forces. They can be corresponded, though, and this explanation for both turns out to be essentially identical. So the highest realm of the four Kabbalistic worlds, the largest sphere that encompasses everything else, is Isaiah. Then there's Yetzirah and Bariah, which in the Zohar and Kabbalistic literature kind of switch places. Then there's Isaiah, which is the realm, Isaiah, which is the realm of material reality in the center. So if you associate these with the terrestrial elements, Atzeluth, the highest realm, is air. Yetzirah is fire, Bariah is water, and Isaiah is earth. But if you associate these same elements with their equivalents in modern science, you would have earth being equivalent to fusion, or the strong nuclear force, the strong nuclear force, fire being equivalent to fission, the weak nuclear force, air being equivalent to electromagnetism, and water being equivalent to gravity. So if we take that structure as being comparable, then the Kabbalistic description says that these four worlds were separated, that the four elements were separated in the very beginning of the creation of the cosmos, and that a symzum occurred that compressed and expanded between each of them, that caused them to blend together in a sense. But in astrophysics and theoretical astrophysics and theoretical cosmologies now, it was more like a seltzerized bubbling effect almost, where instead of there being specific layers of emanations from the Big Bang in the first Planck time following the Big Bang, there was Ylem, Y-L-E-M, which was the fifth element, or the combination of the other four forces. And then after that, the forces began to split apart in a kind of a bubbling effect. So like in one area, there would be a certain kind of law of physics that would contribute more towards being like fusion. And in another area, there would be a different sort of proto law of physics that would eventually evolve into what would be more like fission, and so forth. So that's why in the current local universe, we see filaments strung out like they look like neurons in the brain, or like cotton candy in a way. But then between them are these enormous empty spaces, these gaps. So in the earliest cosmos, things were strewn out. They were strung apart, and these large gaps began to exist in between them. Whereas in the Kabbalistic version of the description, it was more homogeneous, and dealt with the terrestrial elements as perhaps metaphors, or perhaps directly in place of the actual four forces of cosmology that we know through science today.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Now Taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is Taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live, must start and file in app by 2/18.
Interesting. Do you think this structure could be useful in creating new technologies, you know, like being able to harness gravity, you know, or explain how UFOs get their propulsion? That's interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've done some schematic work on a UFO design of my own, UFO being a silly term for a ship that I've schematically designed myself, because it's no longer unidentified once I've designed it. It's a saucer shaped diagram, so it's similar to the traditional UFO conceptions, but it's possible to have technology that's relatively small that can harness anti-gravity that's powered by cold fusion, things like that, that we're only just beginning to develop. For example, cold fusion and toroid or torus-shaped plasma tubes, like a thick donut-shaped glass tube that is full of a certain kind of ionized gas. And then we can extract some energy from that, but we're only just beginning to explore that. All of these diagrams based on these concepts, and the concepts go very far back and the diagrams go pretty far back. All of these can be used as early and inspirational for cybernetics. The computer systems and the technologies that we have now are definitely 100% based on ancient Kabbalistic technology. And I believe our modern extrapolation on that in a trend that will continue into the future. So even technology that we can't even imagine yet will eventually be developed that will still harken back to this same original ideas and concepts and arrangements of these concepts from 2000, 6,000 or more years ago.
That'll be amazing, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it's already quite something.
Mm-hmm. True.
For sure. For sure. So yeah, Jonathan, so you were behind all those drones in New Jersey in December. That's what you're admitting.
By the time this airs, the inauguration will have happened. So we'll have a new president.
Yeah, that is true. And I'm sure
coming to you from the past when we still have a bad president. Hopefully we'll be speaking in the future when we'll have maybe a better president. Who knows?
Yeah. That's
more of an alive president, certainly.
Somewhat conscious president.
More animated.
Yeah. I'm going to miss Biden. I'm going to miss Biden. His press conferences and interviews were just pure comedy sometimes. Pure comedy.
So it is.
Yeah. And this is, really fascinating. And again, your work for the audience, his work puts it all in perspective. He backs up what he says. But where do you think these mystics, the Kabbalists and the Gnostics, were they tapping into some very primordial stuff, some even older traditions? Or where do you think they got such incredible knowledge?
That's a great question. My personal experience is that good inspiration comes from the future. So if I'm sitting here and I want to be inspired, I try to think about what the future will be like and then reverse engineer it to the present. I think a lot of that is similar to what Gnostics and past mystics and seers have experienced and done, is they see the greater light of tachyons coming from the future. They perceive it with their electrochemical processes in the brain that secrete DMT when this happens. All of it gets rather confused, but if they can bring back something that's logical enough to be useful in a sober and sane mental state afterward, then it's considered beneficial to society. So I've tried to do that with most of my work, just bring back things that I think are beneficial and useful forms of technology from just pure inspiration.
So they were doing Tony Robbins manifesting, but doing it right thousands of years ago, basically.
I would say so. We've certainly forgotten how to manifest morally in the interim since civilization was formed, at least.
Yeah, that is true. Or I mean, William Blake did say what is invented was once imagined. So he was doing the same thing. Imagination itself is the great part of our psyche we've lost touch with, but that's what these individuals were doing. And you know, the Gnostics thought, you know, the mind of God, the pleroma, is up here, but it's also inside me with the hermeticist, so I can tap into that mind of God beyond time and space.
Precisely. Yeah. I would describe the pleroma as similar to hyperspace, or the halo around the local universe. It's accessible mentally just by thinking, but it's best accessible through inspiration and trying to think outside the box, trying to have an inspirational experience. Sometimes we have to go out of our way to get into a state where it's safe to have that, because our mundane responsibilities and social reality prevent that. So mysticism is looked at sometimes as being something that's unique or different or apart from ordinary existence, but it can be very much a component of everyday life. Not only inspiration and Gnostic visionary experiences, but the practices that have come from those morally, ethically, and technologically as well.
Well said indeed, for sure. And some may be wondering, well, what's all these secrets? You guys are talking shop and it's all of that, but why don't we get into how to access this? One of the ways, of course, as your books have done, is the idea of numerology to help decode what's behind the Sephiroth and all these diagrams, or mandalas, as some people have called them. So tell us how numerology works in your book, and how you bring in tarot and other tools of numerology into this.
Well, numerology is, or number theory per se, has been one of the common threads that I've found to find logic within otherwise purely mystical interpretations of reality. So, for example, the numbers 7, 12, and 3 are obviously very important from Kabbalah, because they total 22, which is the number of letters in the primordial Hebrew alphabet, but they also symbolize the three phases of matter, as sulfur, salt, and mercury, the seven planets, the seven classical planets of antiquity, and the 12 signs of the zodiac, the astrological zodiac. The zodiac was considered the fixed heavens and the planets the movable heavens. So they were seen as rings. Like in the Alberti cipher disc, for example, there's a ring called Mobilis and a ring called Stabilis. The zodiac was seen as the stable ring, and then the ring of the planets was seen as the mobile ring. Numerology comes in, and number theory in particular comes into this specific arrangement when one tries to understand the ruling planets, for example, of the astrological signs. The sun and moon each have their own ruling planet, but then all the other of the seven classical planets of antiquity have two signs that each rules. So, for example, Libra and I'm not going to be able to remember this off the top of my head. On the circle of the zodiac, the ones that are opposite one another have the same ruling planet. Mm-hmm. So there's Saturn that rules over the two signs at the top. The next one being Jupiter rules over the two signs on either side down from there, and so on and so forth with Mercury and Venus and Mars and so forth, until the sun and moon each rule over one sign at the bottom. And trying to understand that diagram without the visual representation of it has been one of the mysteries or secrets of astrology for a long time. The ruling planets over the astrological zodiac signs can change over the aeons or the precession of the equinoxes as well. So that's probably the reason that that's been kept secret. But if you start looking for the numbers 7 and 12 in texts, and 7 and 3, 7, 4, 4 and 3, sometimes 5, but real simple digits, whenever they come up and you look at in the text around them, there's almost always a clue as to this ongoing perennial tradition Ariadne's thread or the great work or whatever one would want to label it as, that's this continuing knowledge about this type of technology. And it's astrological, it's chakra based, it's essential science for understanding just our place in the universe that we exist in.
No, that makes sense. So these individuals were just, well, I'm asking because some people are like, oh, this is great, but how do I make it work for my life or to be inspired? Like I said, you know, we all have the power for some great invention. How do I make it work in my life? And it's the idea of seeing the source code, right? Astrology, tarot, and you see a code that will eventually work or tell you a message where you need to go, what you need to do.
The Kabbalah was originally designed almost like a ladder itself so that you could ascend from the mundane into the divine. So studying that structure, studying that lattice is itself an inspiration to a higher way of thinking.
Very true. And you don't have to, I'm not that good at math or numerology, but sometimes for me, just the contemplation. You know, again, you would say meditate on the tree of life, meditate on the journey, meditate on like mandalas, which they right. do in the East.
Right.
Just contemplate and you'll also get answers and insights. At the very least, you'll get some peace.
Indeed.
Better Indeed. Blood pressure.
When one's at peace, the answers come more easily.
Of course. Well said. Well said indeed. What do you think, Vance? Have you ever used any of these systems? I know you do. You've done tarot, but
tarot and the Tree of Life, but Tree of Death is a new one on me. I've heard of the Kilopath, of course, but haven't really had any direct knowledge of it besides hearing about it.
And what about individuals that may go like you go into detail talking about the 10, as you showed in the diagram, the 10 archdemons, the kings and all this. It's almost like the opposite, well, not the opposite of the heavenly choir. I played Dungeons and Dragons, of course, I always knew, you know, this is heaven, this is hell. There's all these demons in the layers of abyss and all that. What about people saying, well, that's just dangerous stuff, man. Why are you talking about this stuff? What do you say to them?
It's better to know thy enemy than to cower in ignorance of it.
Yeah. Simple.
It's not evil to study the nature of evil. It's only evil to do evil. There's some quotes floating around nowadays from modern philosophers that say, a good man isn't somebody who is incapable of doing evil, but somebody who is capable of doing evil and chooses not to. Something along those lines. So if you want to learn about these things, it's a good thing. Putting it into practice in some of these regards, I think, is probably immoral or unethical. And in a lot of them, it's psychologically dangerous. Mm-hmm. Magic itself is a dangerous field to enter because it depends so much on belief. And belief can be misled so easily.
Yeah, that is true. And again, from a psychological side, like you said, it's important to see our shadow side, to see what's on the other side and see what's going on with these figures. Yeah, you've got, I was telling Vance, did a presentation recently on Nerea from the Hypostasis of the Archons. And of course, I love that you see it because I think every year, Jonathan, there's a handful of people doing any research on this text, the Hypostasis of the, and it's got so much good gold to mine for and so many Absolutely. Good insights. But, you know, again, a handful of people, including academia, are actually researching. And and this is not my idea. This is like Birger Pearson, who ties in Nerea to Nema, this ancient sort of wild woman who then later became a demoness in the Talmud and other works. And of course you bring her up, Mitch suddenly brings, it's all these synchronicities about this figure, mm-hmm. Nema. And then I find myself, yeah, just fascinating studying this figure and her mythological evolution that Indeed. Included Nerea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the courtesies in the Cliffoth is Nahima,
That's it.
And Nahama is essentially the equivalent of Noria in Gnostic beliefs. But again, with all of the attributes on the Tree of Death, they're essentially ancient deities that were demonized. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, or names for them, disparaging names for deities that were then demonized. When monotheism took hold and became the dominant understanding of reality in the Hebrew religion, all of the other pantheons and polytheisms had to be suppressed and oppressed and demonized. So most of the names of the rulers of the orders of hell and things like that, the names of the chief demons, are actually either bastardizations of the original names of deities, or else the actual names of the deities themselves that have just been slandered in the interim.
Very true. I mean, something like Asmodeus is actually originally a Persian god. They decided to bring him in. Vance was talking about, the Kelepoth being the building blocks of reality. But remember, according to the Babylonians or before, Tiamat is the building block of our universe.
Indeed.
And she, of course, had to be vilified. She was probably once the supreme serpent being. And then the cult of Marduk is like, we need to, bring it down a few notches if we want to have civilization, if we want to have order.
Indeed. In the Enuma Elish, the Babylonian Genesis, they talk about the conquering of Tiamat by either Nibiru, who was likely the original term or name used, and or Marduk, who was the substituted god, and Tiamat being the primordial waters of the underground sweet water, and the Absu being the salt water, I believe, elements. In order for the gods to be established, Tiamat had to be conquered or harnessed, as it were.
Right.
And the myth came down to be essentially either there's Sitchin's interpretation, which is the planets colliding, and then Tiamat was the original version of Earth that Nibiru collided into to form Ki, the moon, and Ea, I suppose, Earth, just in general.
Exactly. Yeah.
But or the description of the gods harnessing and supplanting the elder gods in the Titanomachies, the universal elemental gods being harnessed by the national and local patron deities.
Right.
So in that, Marduk, in the name of Enki and Enlil, suppressed the Absu and Tiamat into the interpretation of them that we have today as the sweet water and the salt water and so forth.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful myth, because I think it goes like Tiamat and Absu just wanted to sleep, and the younger gods were being so loud downstairs like kids.
Exactly.
That's what started the war.
Yeah. The sleeping elder deities.
Yeah, they just want to get some rest after a long day of cooking and cleaning and working.
Yeah.
There's a basic archetype for you.
Absolutely. Same as it ever was.
And a strange morality associated with it. Don't wake the baby. Don't go too far out into the realms of the unknown or explore the underworld too much, because you'll invoke the wrath of the gods.
Exactly. But yeah, Christianity must obviously suppress it. It had no room for it. But I always think in Judaism, I think it was more like, ooh, Lilith and Name and not wink, wink. We'll write some bad things about it, but we need it for our magical practices here and there. I think the Kabbalah didn't really become bad until like Sabbatai Zevi and Jacob Frank for the Jew. Those Indeed. Two guys kind of left a bad taste in the mouth of Judaism in general. But before that, I think it was like, oh yeah, yeah, we might need those spells or astrology at some point, you know.
Word, indeed. I mean, like, it's a fine science. They can't exactly completely censor and ignore and destroy the evidence for it without being, you know, censorious and immoral and evil themselves by doing so, like burning books. But they didn't want to accept it as being the doctrinal faith. So they just put some spin on it and said, instead of the Anunnaki pantheon of Sumer being deities, they were now fallen angels. And they gave birth to the Nephilim, and the Nephilim were giants, and the flood was sent to kill off all the giants so that we wouldn't make the same mistake that they made, which was developing civilization.
Yeah. And I think in Judaism, once you had a text with the writing of somebody holy, like a patriarch or Yahweh, you couldn't burn it because it was considered holy to some point. You know, Christianity and Islam didn't have that problem.
Yeah. There's always been a more veneration. There's always been more veneration for the written word in Judaism, just because of the one jot nor tittle stipulation that you can't change the writings and the holy works because there's a numerological or number theory based code that's hidden in them. And if you change them, then that gets lost.
Exactly. For them. Yeah. It was their code, their I Ching. You know what I mean? It was part of their science and very fabric of reality.
Very much so.
Very true. Well, what you want to move, anything else you want to say? You want to move to your other book, or you want to show some more diagrams to the audience?
Let's go on to the Enochian material, because that's the subject of the second book and can transition relatively well from talking about the Nephilim and the fallen angels.
Cool. You want to show a diagram or get into Metatron's wings?
Metatron's wings is about the Enochian materials. So any diagrams you want to pull up, I'll just start rattling off if I may.
Of course, please do. We like your rattling. Where is the thing?
So originally, right?
All right, tell me when to stop or what we're looking for.
There's the I Ching attributed.
Of course, yeah.
That's a diagram I call the integrated reformed vector system. It's the so-called Neo-Enochian works of the Golden Dawn that were incomplete in Mather's and Israel Righardi's works that I took a month or maybe a few months to try and rearrange the attributes so that they would all be the best symmetrical and accurate description that I could make them be. So that's the same as John Dee's background. The model itself is the square is the four Enochian watchtowers of John Dee, but then the attribution of the zodiac signs and the geomancy signs and the four elements, those come from the Golden Dawn.
Fascinating. All along the watchtowers, huh?
Exactly. Ah, there's the Sigillium Deum Meth. This is a fun one. I color-coded it. Ordinarily, it was entirely enciphered in black and white, and the origins of it were these acrostic squares that were read either vertically or horizontally or diagonally. And in order to make it easier to discern which was which, I color-coded them. So the ones that are read diagonally will be one color, the ones that are read across will be another color, and the ones that are read up and down, etc. And then this is the altar that can be formed from the four watchtowers, seen from above. If you fold that into a cube, you can make it into what was called the altar of the Golden Dawn, or lace the top cube in a double cubic altar.
Fascinating. Yeah, I think that's all the diagrams you sent. There's a cube, right? The four sides of the cube.
Right. And that's the four watchtowers of John Dee's Enochian material, color-coded by the Golden Dawn, and the letters filled in by Aleister Crowley.
Mm.
Become a subscriber for the second half of the show. It helps keep this heresy going. Thanks for your support and being here.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.